Hello and welcome to the Do One Better podcast in philanthropy, sustainability, and social entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Alberto Ligi from London. Please click that subscribe button and follow us if you're not already doing so, and do leave us a rating and a review. It helps others to find the show as well. Today, it's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the show Ebrahim Asaidi, Chief Impact Officer at Save the Children International. And the focus of today's conversation is exactly that. Chief Impact Officer. What does that role do? What does it mean? It's a role that's increasingly coming into prominence, but it's still a relatively new term. Most organizations don't have a Chief Impact Officer. Should yours have one? Would you like to become a Chief Impact Officer, perhaps? Today, we're going to cover all the different angles about what that individual does, what you should think about, and we'll cover some areas that are probably obvious and then some that are not so obvious. So I'm really looking forward to today's conversation. And without further ado, Ebrahim, a big heartfelt welcome onto the Do One Better podcast today.
Thank you, Alberto.
You're the Chief Impact Officer of Save the Children International. We've had someone on the show before from Save the Children. We had Paul Ronalds, who's the Chief Executive Officer of Save the Children Global Ventures. Love to find out, to start with, about Save the Children. What's that all about?
Yeah, thank you, Alberto, for having me. You know, Save the Children is an incredible organization in many ways. It is ahead of its time, and it always has been. It's probably the world's oldest child rights organization. It was first established in 1919. By two amazing women, you know, educationalists and, you know, activists, women's rights activists, Eglantine Jebb and her sister, Dorothy. So they established Save the Children in 1919, just after the World War, supporting children and alleviating the suffering from, you know, children who were suffering from the outcomes of the World War. And so it is really, really old in those regards. And most people in the world will know about Save the Children or will know about UNICEF, for example, that UN. But UNICEF was only established in 1948. So considering, you know,
they're the new kids on the block.
Yeah, exactly. They really are. So when it comes to child rights, you know, really Save the Children has always been ahead of the game and has been actually the driver and the pioneer of what we today call child rights. And I'll tell you a bit about that. So when it was founded in 1919, our founder, Eglantine, then realized that, listen, we cannot continue just feeding children and, you know, clothing them and, you know, providing health services where we can. Surely we have to try and begin to address the root causes of the suffering that we are trying to. We cannot just fix the problem. We have to try and address the root cause. And she very quickly realized that that root cause actually lies to a large extent in a global system that will ensure peace, equality, justice for all the children of the world. That only then that we can root the work that we do in long-term sustainable change for children. And she went on to draft what was then called the Geneva Declaration that was signed in 1924 by the League of Nations. The League of Nations today is what people call the United Nations. It used to be called the League of Nations. So the League of Nations signed a convention, not a convention, a Geneva Declaration of the Rights of the Child in 1924. That declaration was drafted by Eglantine Jebb, the founder of Save the Children. That Geneva Declaration in 1989 became what we now know as the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. So you can see how Save the Children has really been at the forefront and the driver of what we today know and live with as the rights of children in the world.
Wow. Well, what a pedigree, right? And how consequential
yes,
to where we are today. And as I pointed out at the very start, you're the Chief Impact Officer. And that's sort of the thrust of the conversation for today. Chief Impact Officer is a title that I think it's gaining prominence. Everybody's talking about impact. Not everybody necessarily has a Chief Impact Officer. Our friend Anna Hakobian is the Chief Impact Officer at the Children's Investment Fund Foundation, and I had a couple of good chats with her about the fact that people are discovering what Chief Impact Officer means.
Yes.
I'd love for you to shed light on what exactly the Chief Impact Officer does, how you got to it, when you first found out that that was actually a job, any words of wisdom. So in no particular order, but you start wherever you want. Chief Impact Officer.
What is defined as Chief Impact Officer in Save the Children is slightly different to how the Children's Investment Fund approaches it. And you will find those nuances in multiple places. But I think what really is at the core of it, the binder, I think, in all of the roles, irrespective of how they are structured and, you know, who they line manage or not, or what they drive, I think what is unique about all of the roles or the organizations that have it is that the role of the Chief Impact Officer is almost the role that anchors the organization about why the organization exists in the first place, why you do what you do, you know, your purpose. And it's often, you know, all about, you know, creating positive change in the world. Although if you look at the definition of impact, it does not suggest that it's always positive. It can sometimes be negative. But obviously, in the industry, everybody aspires, obviously, to achieving that positive change, long-lasting, often in partnership with other colleagues. That's why most of us exist in the industry, is to achieve that change in people's lives, whether that's children, women, older people, you know, the wider community. And that's what impact really is about in its you know, literal meaning, is change. And that change can be positive or negative. If we manage to get into the measurement of it, we could explore that. But, you know, for Save the Children, the intent really is that positive, long-lasting or positive lasting change that we achieve in the lives of children, their families, and their communities. So that's you know, the anchor. And it is an amazing role, because the aid industry has in itself become an institution. And it is very easy, and it has actually become almost normalized, that the job becomes managing that institution, rather than, you know, putting the focus back on the purpose of that institution. And so the, you know, the aid industry gets criticized quite a lot of becoming this massive machinery, and all of our senior managers spend all of our time just managing that machinery. And managing the machinery does not necessarily equate to managing the purpose of why the organization should do or does what it does. And that's the bit I love about my job, even though I sit in the senior management team. But it gives me that anchor to look around the organization, Save the Children, present in 120 countries around the world, $2.7 billion dollar annual budget, over, you know, 30,000 staff across the world, and every year we try and impact the lives of anything between 40 and 60 million children or people around the world, and that is incredible. It is massive. It is at scale. And it is so satisfying to be sitting at the hem of that, and seeing this amazing network of change makers across the world. It's incredible. I was in Nigeria in October, and I met one of our colleagues in the front line in a community treatment center for malnutrition, and I introduced myself as a Chief Impact Officer, and in return he introduced himself and he said, "I drive impact on the ground," and I just, you know, you could see I was beaming, because it meant he gets it, that he is not just working in a treatment center, but he's actually in real life driving and delivering impact for children.
That's remarkable. And is there such a thing as an average day for you? So you've just listed some of those very impressive statistics about the global footprint that you have, the number of countries, the number of staff. Surely this isn't just for one person. So what does measuring or driving or speaking or embracing impact as a chief impact officer entail in terms of different people who you might have in your team reporting into you from different corners of the world, in terms of the sort of key reporting cycles or strategic cycles that might be on your mind? Give us a little bit of a flavor of that. What does it actually entail?
Yeah. So I oversee all of our, what we call our technical excellence. And so our strategy, we have four goals in our strategy. And each of those goals, we call them thematic areas, you know, health and nutrition, you know, education, child protection, and poverty and climate change and all. And all of these are very specialist technical areas, and all of this incredible network of technical leaders across the organization that work in that area basically, you know, fall within my line of support, people I work for, you know, rather than them working for me. So when you talk about my day, yes, it's from when I start 8 o'clock in the morning to when I finish at 6 or 7 p.m. is about those people. It's just problem solving. You know, what are the challenges they are facing in the technical quality of what they do? What administrative hurdles is the system or the infrastructure putting in their way? And how do I take those out to enable them to focus on delivering those outcomes for children? What technical expertise do they need to further develop for them to be better at achieving positive outcomes? What professional development do we need to put in place? What funding do we need to raise? Where, and working with our fundraisers to make sure we increase that understanding, where the need is across the organization, working with our colleagues in humanitarian, understanding the humanitarian landscape and where crises are hitting and what technical support do they need? Where do they need extra backstopping? Where do they need more people to lean in to make sure that we're able to provide support for people in our front line and ensuring that they deliver as best as possible? So that's my typical day, is literally working for this amazing network of people across the world who every day wake up and put their shoes on and do everything they can to make the world a better place for children. And my day is to just help them do that.
Must be incredibly rewarding. And it's interesting because I have a feeling that a lot of people listening to this conversation might at first sight think, oh, chief impact officer, here we are evaluating a project evaluation, assessment, measuring all of these little bits and pieces. But what you're describing is that's just one facet, perhaps, of a much broader picture. And you're an enabler. You're understanding the bottlenecks. You're understanding this, and even the resources and the scarcity of resources, right? In order for people to do what they know how to do best.
Exactly. And maybe, you know, I'll even step back and set up. So when I came into the role, and as you rightly mentioned, one of the first things I noticed, there have been predecessors in my role, but none of them have been called chief impact officer. So that was the first, and it was quite, you know, deliberate, and the intent was very clear in the organization. And one of the first things was everybody obviously understood impact differently, and some people will take the number of people that we reach and commensurate that to the impact that we are achieving, and the two are completely different. So one of the first things I set out to do is to actually try and provide some kind of a strategic vision for what is impact and where are we going with it, or where should we take it. So we ended up developing what we now call our impact agenda for Save the Children. And I think, you know, I'll talk through this because other chief impact officers, new ones, current ones, upcoming ones, may also find this useful, and I will be keen to learn from others as well how they are approaching this. So our impact agenda has five components, interconnected components. One is clarity or definition of the impact that we seek as Save the Children. So not trying to define impact, the dictionary can define impact for us. But that definition of impact, like I said, you know, can be positive or negative. So it's providing clarity and defining what is the impact that Save the Children seeks to achieve first. So we spend time, you know, consulting across the organization, understanding where people sit on this, what they think about it, and coming up with a unified definition, understanding of the impact that we seek to achieve. So we have a unified starting point across. So we're not debating anymore about, oh, impact means reaching 60 million children. No, it doesn't necessarily mean that. It means more than that. So that's one. Two is then, how do you drive that? How do you embed that in the way you work, the way you design projects, the way you fundraise, the way you implement those projects? The example that I gave of the amazing colleague in Nigeria, and you know, when I went to Guatemala in October, similar conversation with other colleagues there, all of those people understanding what they do is actually driving impact. So there's a big piece about culture, the culture of impact in the organization. And beyond just spending money, beyond just getting a job, what is the purpose? What is the why? And working with HR on that culture piece as well, to try and connect everyone in the organization to that why. People don't come to organizations like Save the Children just for a job. They're there because of who we are, because of our why, because of our purpose, and that is the impact. So putting that, connecting that with HR, connecting with our marketing, with our fundraising, with our operations, the way we implement programming, all of that is about driving that impact that we seek across the organization. Central to that, the culture piece, to try and transform the organization. So that's the second. Third, therefore, is how do you resource that impact? So, and resourcing here is not just about financial resources, but it's also about technical resource, your intellectual resource, your material resource. How do you align all of that to that impact that you seek to achieve in the organization? And then fourth, which is the part that you are referring to, is therefore, how do you measure that impact? So how do you try and go from just measuring outputs in your projects and what you deliver, to pushing the boundaries to outcomes, and eventually to impact that you're achieving in children's lives? And the fifth component is, how do you tell that impact story? Because that's absolutely critical. And in Save the Children, we use that to position us as a go-to organization on what works in achieving sustainable change in children's lives. We use that in our fundraising, and we use that in our public engagement, but we also use it in our policy and campaigning work to try and change systems, engage the UN, engage governments. All of that is part of that telling that impact story, to say, this is the evidence we're getting from our measurement, and we think if you do these things, you can achieve sustainable impact for children.
Now, unfair here for me to ask, but I just feel like I should ask, do you have a favorite among those five items? And could be, you know, I can just see, just like a chief executive can be more of an ambassadorial one, or more of a sort of like chief operating officer style CEO. What about you? Is perhaps communicating that story the most interesting? Is it perhaps the culture side? Do you have a favorite? Unfair to ask, but I have to ask.
I do. Everyone has a favorite child. You don't say it in public. So no, nobody's listening. This is just you and I.
Well, and a few others.
Listening on the everybody else listening on the podcast right now is just pretending that it's just you and I, and they're not hearing us. But I think driving impact bit, because that's where in your classic talk, that's where the rubber hits the road, really. But I think the culture piece in that, especially in our industry, is so critical, that how that is the part That is the soul, actually, of the organization. That is the part that sets us apart. One of my counterparts, our chief operating officer, David Wright, he says, I want to, he looks after our operations. He says, I want to set a deep blue sea between us and others. And that's not from a competition point of view, but it is from a deep blue sea in achieving outcomes for children and transforming the lives of children. We want to do it in such a way that nobody is like us, because we are the pioneer. We've talked about that in the history of Save the Children. We set the pace and others follow. And that's where the driving impact component is my favorite part, because that's where we actually touch children's lives. That's where we're delivering, those outcomes. And that's where the culture of the organization, the ambition to become a learning organization in the way we do that every single day. That's where we innovate. We do the measurements and we use the evidence from that measurement to iterate. And consistently, we're adapting our programming. And if you adapt once, twice, three times, you're already hitting the realms of progressive innovation in that area, and you're setting the pace. And you're using that methodology to then influence the rest of the world and to show other partners how to achieve it. So it's clearly my favorite part. But increasingly, the measure part is amazing. And it's really exciting, probably the one that challenges me the most. And I like the driving part because it's almost our core, it's our business as usual. The measurement part challenges us the most. There is an impact revolution going on in the world. Everybody is talking about impact, even if you go to businesses. And that means for organizations like Save the Children, where impact is actually our core business, to speak business terms, business should be really good. And the way to know if business is good for us, which is the business of impact, is our measurement. That's where we are able to measure to see the results, not just the children we are reaching, but what is the change that we are with our partners, government, civil society organizations, children themselves, and families. What is that step change? What is that improvement that we are contributing to in children's lives? And measurement is incredibly technical. It's incredibly complex. Complex the least because you're dealing with children's lives. What you do in health is cannot necessarily be measured or aggregated and talked about in the same way as what you do in education or what you do in child protection. So it's all incredibly complex and the most challenging. And never, I like it because I like to be challenged. I like to be pushed out of my comfort zone myself and consistently learning new ways and new things. And we have a whole team dedicated to that measure component. And recently we had a joint meeting with some of the other INGOs, IRC, care as well, to basically, share ideas and listen to each other on where are you on your measurement journey to impact. What have you done? What do you like about what you do? Where's your ambition, and what are your challenges? Where are the areas that you haven't found the best way to measure what your contribution is, and can we co-create together and share lessons and ideas on how to do that?
Fascinating, fascinating. Now, you mentioned you are the first ever Chief Impact Officer at Save the Children International, and you've given us a really good overview of how integrated your role is, the different bits and pieces that you're keeping an eye on and involved with, and some that you like more than others, and all of these things, right? Question for you. Does every INGO, international NGO, foundation, charity, does everybody need a chief impact officer? Is that something that a chief executive listening to this who maybe doesn't have one should be thinking about? Is it also from a philanthropic perspective, when you're thinking about how to allocate your philanthropic funding, should you be looking at organizations that have taken that step for a chief impact officer?
Absolutely. I think everyone has someone that does something that is similar to the role of a chief impact officer. But I think as the industry itself is evolving, I've mentioned the impact revolution that is going on in the world. It is both a strategic and political intent as well, and statement to say, hey, we want to focus on our purpose. We want to focus on our why. And so even if you're a business and you know, there is part of your business that you want to do something good in the world, then you do need a chief impact officer to help you think through and provide the leadership to drive that. If you're an NGO, international or not, yes, there is probably somebody already doing what we call either a program director or driving quality and driving measurement. And what it does, calling it impact, is it takes it away from the individual tasks to a much bigger intent.
Yeah, because the program director wouldn't ex necessarily cover everything we've discussed. The program director would not necessarily be looking at the culture piece, looking at engaging across the organization, looking at the fundraising piece, even though they interact. But it's a, you know, it sits at a different hierarchy, level in the hierarchy, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that link to your purpose and to your why at a high level strategic level, it makes a huge statement. So yes, I would like to see more chief impact officers out there and perhaps many more also sharing what is their agenda and how they are driving that in their organization.
Now, what has been your journey? So, can a chief impact officer come from anywhere, first of all, or are there some key things you must have? And now I'm thinking about folks perhaps in their career who are thinking, you know what, chief impact officer sounds pretty cool. Like, I'd like to explore moving into that. So, your journey and then words of wisdom for those listening.
So yes, a chief impact officer can come from anywhere, really. It is not so much your technical knowledge of one particular area, because you will have experts in those areas. And we earlier talked about people I line manage. So I have a head of, evidence and learning, for example. He is the expert, and I have a global director for health and nutrition. I cannot match her, expertise in that area. I have a global director for education and for child protection, or for migration and displacement, or for child rights. These are amazing global thematic experts in their areas, and my knowledge and expertise cannot match theirs in any day. So I think you can therefore come from anywhere. It is about the confidence and the comfort to line manage and support people who are experts in their area, and bringing the leadership competencies that will enable you to one, support them and work for them, but also help them to get the best out of them. So it's a chief impact officer. It's a leadership role more than a technical knowledge area. But at the same time, you do need to have an incredible level of knowledge, insight on the work itself. So, yes, years of experience out working on those issues. You may have come from either general project management or general leadership, but you've been working in the industry, whether as a funder, a donor, a government person, or a business person, but interacting with that industry. So you could come from any of those, plus your own passion, your own interest, and the leadership skills and competencies that you bring to transform organizations and to transform the teams and get the best out of them for children. Personally, I'm from the Gambia. It's a tiny little country in West Africa. Most people listening to this may probably know, because they will probably be, interested in global issues. But yeah, a lot of people don't know much about the Gambia at all. It's very small, 2.5 million people. We joke that Gambians are very rare species, because we're very small. But But we are also, I think, special in our own ways. And my journey has been for as far back as I can remember. I think this is probably about 8 or 9 years old in primary school. I went to a village primary school, and I've always wanted to build something. And it took me many years. I went into civil engineering, and it took me years of engagement in civil engineering to actually realize that actually what I really wanted to build was not bridges and roads and buildings, but actually it was lives. And the reason for that revelation as well was the fact that even though from primary school I started as a child rights advocate at the school that I was, I volunteered a lot with every single organization that was working there. From the Scouts to the Red Cross. I remember my journey in the Red Cross youth movement as an activist, as a child leader. So even though in parallel I was studying, even all the way to college and university, I was studying civil engineering, but during holidays, all of my friends will go to construction sites, and I will go and work for an amazing national NGO in The Gambia called BAFRO, the Foundation for Research on Women's Health, Productivity and the Environment. And I will be running a youth center for information and counseling. And I will close that, and I will go to the Red Cross and be running more additional voluntary activities, running activities in refugee camps or internally displaced camps, or training other children and young people to become leaders. And everybody will come back to school at the end of the day, or at the end of the holidays, we'll talk about construction, and I have no idea what they were talking about. And I think it took many, many years to actually realize you're actually studying to build the wrong thing. And then I went back to university to do my master's is in international health, and with a focus on children and young people, which is the professional route that I have been doing since I was 8 years old. But for some amazing, not so great career guidance, I ended up in civil engineering because wanting to build something only meant building roads and bridges,
Wow.
and so that is my story. That's how I ended up in the industry, and it has been, and still remains, absolutely amazing. I wake up every single day, ever more committed that we can make the world a much, much better place than it is today. And listen, the world is already a much, much better place than what it was. And I think, we've committed to the Sustainable Development Goals. 2030 is right around the corner. Save the Children, we have our three amazing breakthroughs, which are incredibly ambitious, that we want to see achieved by the year 2030. We know they will not be achieved by 2030, but it's the audacity to dream big, that as an organization, this is the world that we want to see. We want to see a world that no child dies from preventable causes before their fifth birthday. We want to see a world where every child is benefiting and accessing from good quality education. And we want to see a world where violence against children is no longer tolerated. And I strongly believe that that world is within grasp.
Absolutely, absolutely, and amazing, amazing things to focus on. It'd be great to see how the thinking unfolds, right? Just like you pointed out, 2030 is around the corner for the Sustainable Development Goals. This those cycles, those the Millennium Development Goals, then the SDGs. Be nice to see what the thinking's going to be for the next set of goals, right? Because I
Yes.
know that there's going to be a few things left on the table after 2030 that are still on that to-do list. Unfortunately. Listen, thoroughly enjoyable here, the conversation. We're parting ways today. We only have 30 minutes. We've already gone by that. But I'd love to ask you for a key takeaway. What's that one thing you'd love for the audience to keep in mind after they finish listening to today's episode?
Yeah. Well, I think, that it's a great point to finish on, that actually the world is a much better place, right? So Gapminder, they do this survey of questions online, and they ask people, do you think extreme poverty in the world is actually better or worse. And 80% of respondents actually think it's worse, but that couldn't be further away from the truth. In 1980, that's only 40 years ago, 40% of the world lived on less than $2 a day. And today, 40 years later, we managed to bring that down to only 10% of the world. That is incredible progress in 40 years. And so to our ambition, the 2030 is just around the corner. I actually believe that, getting rid of extreme poverty is within grasp. If we can manage to achieve that much, progress in 40 years, but we need to zero in on levels of inequality and discrimination in the world. If we can zero in on that, it is within grasp for all of us to live in a world where extreme poverty is genuinely history. It's a much better place, but it's still 10% of the world that are left behind, often and most likely because of levels of inequality and discrimination. And if we zero down on those two, we can bring along that rest of 10% and make this amazing world an even better and more exciting place to live in.
Absolutely. Well, here's to making that happen. Ibrahima, thank you so very much for joining me and joining us on the Do One Better podcast today. Absolutely thrilling, enjoyable, insightful. And so thank you for making the time and for sharing your story as well. It's been great.
It has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Perfect. And that's a wrap. Thanks very much for tuning in. As always, you've been listening to a great chat with Ibrahima Saidi, Chief Impact Officer at Save the Children International. For information about this conversation and more than 250 other interviews and case studies with remarkable thought leaders in philanthropy, sustainability, and social entrepreneurship, just visit our website at lidji.org. That's lidji.org. Please click that subscribe button and follow us if you're not already doing so. And I'll catch you this coming Monday.